If anyone has any questions, we'll start out with that. You can raise your hand and get your question answered.
Go ahead, Ralph.
Thank you. Yesterday we spoke of the independent market. How do I access that website, or how do I contact, etc.?
The Independence Market is part of the National Federation of the Blind. It's their store, aids and appliances and things that they think are useful and helpful for people with blindness and low vision. And they are on the nfb.independencemarket.org.
Thank you very much.
NFE, Independence Market, all one word, .org.
I will look into it. Thank you.
It'll be in the handout, too, when we're finished with the retreat.
That's correct. We will have a resource guide for people, you know, giving you this information as well.
816.
When we ran out of time, the gentleman that was presenting on the canes was talking about using a long cane in snow. I wondered if he had anything else to say about that. Thank you.
Snow does present challenges, and it depends on how much of it you get at one time. First of all, when it is snowing, it does muffle sound. So telling distancing of traffic and other things can be sound very different. And it's going to cover the sidewalks or the places that you have. And when it first starts, it's going to be wet and slippery usually. But as it accumulates, you may not be able to find the sidewalk. I mean, if you get more than 4 or 5 inches, probably it's going to hide the sidewalk. And so your guide probably will only really be that you find a space that you can physically walk in, as opposed to walking by trees or bushes. I went to college in northern Wisconsin, and sometimes the only landmark I had was a bunch of trees on my left, because there was no sidewalk. We'd get a foot or two of snow at a time, and that's the only landmark I had. So it definitely changes the environment for everybody, and it depends on how much snow you get, and then it can snow again. So sometimes it's just how slushy it is, or if there is a small pass. Sometimes when people shovel and there's enough snow, it's really a very narrow place that you have as a pedestrian to walk. And you do have to be careful, because it can also be very slippery and icy. Where I'm living now is we don't have that much snow, but it melts during the day, and every night it freezes, and then we have ice. So that can be very treacherous for pedestrian walking, and sometimes it's just not safe for anybody to walk. And
so
I guess,
Robert,
along with, yes.
Oh, I was just going to add a couple things too, but
okay, go ahead.
Maybe you were.
Sure.
So until the snow really gets very deep, you can feel it.
Yeah.
As you're walking down the sidewalk, the sidewalk is definitely different than if you get off onto the grass. It's totally different still. And then at some point, your cane, the arc doesn't really kind of work like it once did. So you almost have to like poke it into the snow, to the right, to the left, because again, it'll go down through the snow fairly decent. And of course, once they get the sidewalks cleared off, then it's kind of like walking down a chute, because you've got, you know, a bank of snow on the right and on the left, and then you just arc your cane left to right. You can feel the wall of snow on the right, wall of snow on the left. So it's actually very easy, you know, when they have the sidewalks. And with that cane out in front of you, you can learn pretty quickly to know when it touches down on ice versus touches down on, you know, cement, or, you know, the normal surface, because I could, and you learn to walk a little bit different when you're on ice. You kind of, you know, learn to kind of maybe put your feet down more, flat, and have a lot of flexibility in your knees to keep your balance, because if you just do a lot of hard stuff with your bringing your heel down, then you might start skating, actually. So I will kind of put more of almost a flat foot down, and again, just keeping my balance as I'm going along. I'm pretty good. I'm actually pretty good on ice, and a lot of people think I'm not going to be because I'm blind, but then I start doing skating things and twirling around, say, oh yeah, can you do this? All right, bye. Anyway, okay.
Okay, Judy Sanders is unmuted. Did you have some comments or a question?
Well, I think Robert did pretty well, but I was going to offer, being here in Minnesota, with one of our slots, maybe the Friday one, our what if slot, I will look for a snow specialist, somebody who actually liked it, and that won't be me. and if we can get somebody, we'll add them to our show on Friday.
Okay, good.
All right, see a 303. 303. Yeah, I was going to say, to me, you unmute there. To me, the challenge is when you really get a few inches of snow, you can't feel the sidewalk from the grass anymore, and it changes the sound reflects. So you have to really pay attention to the street on your left or right and any buildings or trees. And you have to.
Yeah, sometimes you walk in the street.
And you got to go back to the old school, the way that I was originally taught with the double tap, because you have to raise, otherwise you can't get stuck in the snow, and you can't just slide like you usually do. So it's its own art. Okay, we're number 303. Go ahead.
Oh, no, this is Wayne. I just joined back in the meeting here, and I just caught the end of what you were talking about with the walking in the snow with your cane.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah. 816. Yeah.
To go ahead, Wayne.
It is certainly an art, but once you get used to doing it, I mean, like I said, I would a lot of times have to really raise your cane depending on the height of the snow and how deep it is. And you guys in Baltimore and other places like that know that it could get pretty high, and you can't just. You know, you can't do constant contact, and you can't do, you know, sweeping, anything like that, but you just have to raise it up and get it in there in that snow. Sometimes you have to push, in the snow, and really sometimes even poke and feel to make sure, you know, where curves and that type of thing are.
816.
What is that? I was wondering about, I live way out in the country without sidewalks, and there's a gravel road, but the traffic is infrequent. And so when I'm trying to walk out to the yard and get to the mailbox, there's a possibility that I may miss my area and go wandering off into the field. And I was wondering about artificial landmarks or something that I could put out there that would help me stay on course. Does anyone have any suggestions for that?
Mm-hmm. I think that you can certainly create your own landmarks, whether it's like, you know, metal pole or landscape timbers, you know, the wood planks that go alongside of the gravel versus the grass, or use that transition as your landmark, natural landmark. I don't know what your setup is, but I don't see anything wrong with creating your own landmarks or shorelines to help guide yourself to the particular area, to the mailbox, or to make sure your safety from your property to the road even.
Robert, I've seen some people use wind chimes, you know,
because
if you have any kind of a bridge, your wind chime. I have a guy I know that he's got a little remote that he carries in his hand, and it carries from his road to his farm buildings, and he's got a buzzer, you know, up on the side of his house. So if he ever needs to kind of get a sound cue, he just gets his little remote, and he got it at Radio Shack, and he put it, like I say, a buzzer thing on the outside of his house, so that remote would make that buzzer, you know, give a sound. So I said that was pretty good. Just make sure you have some extra batteries in your pocket in case, you know.
You can even use the luggage locator for that back too.
Yeah, I used to use a cordless telephone. I lived in apartments where everything looked the same when I first moved there. I wasn't sure where things were.
Okay.
Cordless phone. Bill Borner has a question.
I just wanted to thank Jack for his service to our nation, and to also add that he's in good company. A certain young man grew up supposedly destined to work in his father's tailoring and leather working shop south of Paris, but he ended up with an eye disease and didn't inherit his father's tailoring business. Instead, he went into the Paris Institute for the Blind and wrote Braille, Louis Braille.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Good thing. Yeah.
Alone was a friend of mine as well. She said, hey.
Good. Hey.
What I think is kind of funny is if just think if I would have invented the Braille system, would it be called? You guys would be reading Newman.
We don't know.
Okay.
Newman.
It might be Oldman. Oldman.
Sure. Sure. Okay.
There's another question.
No, this is Judy. I keep getting a notice to unmute my microphone. And that happens every time I have muted. I mean, I ask my question, I go back in, but am I correct that?
Yeah, Zoom's acting weird, and I don't know without shutting down and restarting the meeting. I'm trying to avoid that.
Oh,
but
no, it's not a big deal. I could always think of something else to say.
I think it's because your hand was raised, and I thought that meant you hadn't spoken yet, so I apologize.
Oh, well, no, it's happened several times today. I don't think it's just you.
Yeah, we've had people unmute that shouldn't be, and Zoom's acting weird today. So,
well, Judy, you're pretty popular. That's all it boils down to.
No, I am self-important. That's why I keep doing it.
Yeah, who else?
Do you have any other questions? You can raise your hand. We're open. If anyone would like to, our presenters are still here from the previous hour. If you want to know anything about, okay, there's a couple coming up.
Okay. Quiet today.
Are they saying it's lunchtime? It's lunchtime, isn't it?
It's lunchtime. 816?
Yeah, I was thinking about going to go do that too. This is your golden opportunity to ask any kind of question. Yeah.
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to ask when I left before, did everything go okay?
No, it prompted. I had to log in again, so.
Yeah, I couldn't get it to stop. I apologize. I tried to completely log out, and then I logged back in and did it again, so I'm sorry.
Hey, it's Zoom.
Hey, that's technology for you, Bill.
That's right.
Well, if there's no other questions, I'm going to go
just
have
lunch. No, Wayne, I actually do have something I think we could talk about a little bit, and that is we talk about snow and that, but what I think is a hazard or is something that is wind, because wind, if you're a blind person and you're traveling, it's windy. What you hear and where it's located may be totally different from what you're thinking. And also, not just in, but when I lived in Connecticut, we had these buildings downtown, and the wind would come up, and it carried sound totally differently around. It was like wind tunnels would come, but even on windy days, it makes such a difference in what you're hearing and what actually may be in your environment.
And where it's
maybe we could
from.
Talk mm-hmm. about that a little bit, because I find that a challenge.
Yeah, and especially for us as blind people, trying to use our hearing. But, that's when we probably have to rely more on, landmarks, or be more aware of, the curves and our shorelines and those type of things. And that's why, even the sun and all of that. I mean, it's really important I can't stress enough, using everything that is available to you, because sometimes you don't have everything that you're accustomed to, and sometimes you have more things than you're accustomed to, like the wind. It could change at any point, and that's when we have to rely on our various skills, that we've obtained. And that's why I said don't just rely on one thing, because I remember going to Helen Keller for some training. We're working with deaf blind, and we couldn't hear. We had to use earplugs and that, and couldn't hear the sounds, which things that you relied upon so much. So it caused you to use those other skills even more. So that's where that shorelining comes into effect. That's where, if you get turned around, that's where your sun location helps keep you on track. If you were traveling a certain direction, and you might even turn to block that wind, or snow or whatever it is, you need to turn back to that sun and continue in that direction. If that curb was on your right, all of a sudden you can't find it, you need to go back over that to your right and find that curb. Or if the grass is on your left, that kind of thing, and realign yourself. It's very important to use those things. If the traffic was on my right, now all of a sudden, it's behind me, and I just turned to block that gust of wind. Well, you need to put it back where it was. you need to realign yourself and continue on that, you know, your path, because sounds can move though, you know, like you said. And, I remember being in downtown Denver and those high rises there, and it would change for me too, but I know to rely upon what I had.
Yeah, and I think it's important to realize that you can get disoriented that way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can happen, and you may not know how you got where you are, but with the information that you have, can you retrace where you want to go? And sometimes that is definitely a challenge, because you're not finding the landmarks that you're accustomed to finding in the same way. So traveling is a challenge sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get disoriented and you can get turned around. You know, especially, you know, you could be talking to someone else or be on the phone and be distracted. And, you know, that's why it's important to concentrate on what you're doing and take note of what's around you, your environment, be as conscious as possible. And, you know, if all of a sudden, hey, it's, you know, and if you don't have the sun, but you have sound, then you can use that sound to realign yourself. You know, I just can't stress enough, you have to use everything that's available to you, and you have to be conscious when you're traveling, be aware, and not be distracted. Some things we can't control, but being on the phone, you know, a lot of conversation, you know, not paying attention to when you're out traveling, it's not good. You know, so
I have a question.
If you can avoid those things.
Yeah, we got a 205 that someone knew, I think. Go ahead.
Okay. 205.
Hi.
Hello.
Barbara.
Hi, what's your question?
Talk about the hobbies. I have been an interest for 43 years and was able to sew and do all these things, and I still can do those. But for a hobby, I started doing pottery, and I had done it on the wheel when I had sight, but when they removed my eyes 4 years ago, I started doing freeform. And there's no way to fail. Absolutely no way to fail. You can call any of your art supply stores and purchase I think it's a 20-pound block of clay. And if you have a rolling pin, glass that's smooth, you can roll it out. You don't have to have the wheel and water and all these things. And you can form it over a bowl that you have or a cylinder use. But it's that also give you colors of glaze to do on it, and you can find people that will fire that for you. But it's an absolutely no-fail product.
That was my question. Did you have a kiln so you have someone else that'll actually cook it, whatever it is?
I gave it to a young man that had Down syndrome, and he really needed something to do. So I gave him my kiln because I have others that will fire it for you. But it just, I say, it's a no-fail art. I mean, I've done trays, I've done bowls, I've done different sculptures. You don't want just ordinary bowl. You want it to have movement and shape and irregular corners or size. And I normally just glaze the interior of the bowl because I like the roughness that you get in the exterior of whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. If I do trays or anything like that, I usually go back and put bumpers on the bottom of them so that what they call dry footing, and a lot of your fine china is dry footed at your table or glass, so the bumpers are good to use there.
Okay,
but
how do you make sure?
Investment will make tons of Christmas or birthday presents for your family or friends.
Now, how do you make sure that you have no air bubbles in the clay so it doesn't break in the kiln?
When you start rolling it out, you just work it flat, and it's like kneading dough to bake a loaf of bread or roll. You just keep kneading it and pushing into it, and you can feel those things. When you get it very, you don't want to do it thick either. The thinner you do it, the prettier it'll come out, and it's more like very fine pottery rather than what you might think of as a clay pot for a plant or churn, something of that nature.
Well, I have a question. If you put if you use something as a mold for it, do you put anything between like the bowl and the clay to help you peel it off, or so it don't stick, or so you can keep that mold or anything?
when I use them, if I want something to be a particular size and I want it to have a very flat bottom and not have a frame that would, or an easel that would hold it, I take saran wrap and wrap it over the bowl that I need for a form. And then I take a bottle or something, can something to elevate that bowl. So my project doesn't have to be only the depth of that bowl. It can have much more form. And then I kind of can just start pressing around the base of that bowl, and it's upside down to where I know that that's nice and flat if that's what I'm trying to accomplish. But then you let it dry for, it takes me a day for it to dry flat, and it's still very breakable. But at that point, you can turn it over in your hand, remove the bowl, pull out the cellophane, and send it to be fired the first time. If you want to glaze, come back and glaze the interior, and again, send it back to be fired.
Linda, did you have a question?
Oh, excuse me. Yes, I actually did, but I was wondering about echolocation. How exactly does it work? I mean, I know like one or just like maybe one sentence to describe it, but that's it. And then how do you, if it is something that would be useful, how would I get trained in that?
So echolocation is the feedback that you get from the sound of your, the tapping of your cane, which was then bounce off a building or, you know, a door or any solid object ahead of you or around you. And that helps you, you know, discover that is something that is near you. For example, if you are looking for a building and you'll get that echo response, that sound reverberation that kicks back from your cane tip hitting a solid surface, for example, like concrete, and it will bounce off a building to let you know that that building is there ahead of you. Or, you know, even a vehicle or any mass, a large mass, you'll get that, the sound, the bounce back of the sound to you. Without touching the mass. That's right.
And how do you get training for that?
Well, you know, there's, with an O&M instructor or actually trial error with using your, you know, using your cane when you're near a building, it just become, second nature, if you will. The more you do it, the more you, it's another skill that what you acquire, the more you use it, you know, the more it becomes, you know, second nature, you become more familiar with it and the feedback that you get from various structures even. So it's something that you have to practice.
Hey, Wayne.
And you can even, yes.
It's Jerry. I just a simple little test you can try for yourself, and this is not even necessarily echolocation, but you can take, if you're standing next to a wall and you, in front of you is a big open space, and then you turn your head and you're only within 2 inches of the wall, you can feel the wall pushing on your eardrums in a small sense that shows you it's a hearing thing, because I've put my fingers in my ears and I've run right into the wall. So it totally is a hearing thing. Mm-hmm. That's just a small, I know you're talking specifically about echolocation. There's times when you can actually develop this to the extent that I can feel 20 feet above my head. I can hear the trees without an echo. But it really is just Wayne said, you physically, like in your driveway, you could take your cane, and this really works really well with a metal tip cane. But you can just tap it and just see if you can hear the echo. And it really is not something that you're going to learn overnight. This is a long-term process of development.
Yeah.
I don't feel it at all with buildings. I feel it, like, sometimes if I'm walking by, like you're saying about walking in your house, I'll know that the wall, that I'm about to walk into a wall before I walk into it or whatever. But I have no clue when I get outside that there's like a building.
Well, it really comes into play if you have an entryway that has a cutout, you can really get that, because there's a hollowness there. And so for me, for example, if I get out of a car, I have a circular driveway and someone let me out beyond my entryway. And in my entryway, there's a covered little walkway to my door where I have a bench. And I can tap my cane out in my drive. And if I'm close enough, you're getting hot there. As I walk toward my home, I can hear that echo response. That sound reverberates inside of that space even. Maybe not so much as the building itself. I have to get closer to the structure itself to get that same sound. But even at a distance, when I'm tapping my cane, that sound travels inside of that open space and reverberates out, back out to me. And that goes, hey, there it is. That's my opening. That's my doorway. And I don't know if you have an apartment or if you have a home like that that has a covered porch or, something like that, a cutout even. You can try that. And you'll hear the difference whether if you're in the hallway or right at your doorway. And maybe you should try that. Just facing the wall and then a cubby. And the more you do that, the more you become familiar with the different sounds. Just like different textures when you tap on a concrete versus, wood floor, tile floor. They all have different sounds and they all give out different type of echo response to it. And also based on the space that you're in as well.
Yeah,
when you're walking outside, you can hear cars that are parked. When you're tapping your cane, you can actually hear the echo off of. And granted, as you do this more often that you do it, the distance becomes greater. But in the beginning, it may only be 3 or 4 feet. But it's just as you're tapping, you just pay attention to the different sounds as you're outside, and you'll slowly develop a different sound for it, a different skill.
Mm-hmm. Now, something I do.
I don't sense a sound at all right now, but I do one of you were saying, like if I'm inside and there's a wall in front of me, I kind of start feeling it like 4 or 5 inches before I hit it. When I'm swimming, I'll feel the wall maybe a foot before I hit it, but not always and not consistently.
I don't know if it's, some people look down upon it, but it works for me. I certainly wouldn't do it around a lot of people, but if I'm outside and I know a building's off at a distance, or like you're talking in your home, the wall, I'll make the little click sound. And I'll get a good echo. I will know, 20, 30 feet out.
Or even snapping
something. Your finger,
Yeah, I do that. Periodic, especially when I'm looking, when I know I'm looking for something, I can hear the deadness of the building versus the clicking of the sound. I mean, so like even in a garage that has a path, sometimes you just can't get a decent tap with your cane, so you kind of have to snap your fingers, and you can hear the echo. And it's just it's a little tool. It's hard to say when you say you want to be trained in it. You can kind of give somebody can demonstrate a little bit of it for you, but it really is going to become trial and error for yourself to see how you do it as you're traveling.
We can demonstrate it, but it's nothing like you doing it and becoming aware of that sound, and becoming aware of the technique that you need to get that feedback, type of tapping. That's why that clicking that people do with their mouth, they try to mimic the sound of the tapping like of our cane. And that's why we use the metal tip versus the nylon tip. It gives you that tapping, that metal on whatever surface that you're using versus plastic or, that's basically what they are, the nylon tips. So you get more echo. Now, are you using a nylon or a metal tip?
I think it's metal. It's not the traditional flat tip. I had that once upon a time, but I forget what it's called. It's like a new porcelain. That's what it is. It's a porcelain tip.
Oh, the porcelain tip.
And it's really good so far. I mean, I really like it. But it doesn't get stuck in the sidewalk nearly as much. But I guess.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I don't want to take up too much time. So if there's other questions, I'll be quiet. But if you have the time, I'm just wondering, can you demonstrate what is that when you say click, then what are you listening for? Because I don't hear anything. I mean, and I have normal hearing, but I don't.
Linda, I can tell when you're talking, like you and Wayne have more echoey environments that you're in right now, as a matter of fact. you know, some other people. So that kind of means that you're in kind of an open space, or you don't have as much carpeting or
no curtains
or things that, which is fine. But I mean, so you can even hear when people are communicating here. Sometimes people have more echo in their environments.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
a good place.
Yeah.
It's really malls, because a mall entrance, you definitely can tell a mall entrance, as opposed to when you go inside a mall and then, you know, the different places within the mall. But you'll hear all kinds of different sound and texture in a mall that you may not live where there are them, but that is a wonderful place to try these techniques out, because there's so much variance.
And so can you tell the difference between a doorway and just a wall with listening to the echo?
I can.
A lot of times you can, I think, yes.
Yeah, I
and if not, you can explore. I mean, it's okay to go, sometimes I want to know distancing of things or where things. In some malls, they have displays, and so I can hear the display, but then the store there may be three or four displays in front of the store. So then I have to, you have to negotiate by sound and by using your cane how to get into the store, because it may be a narrow opening or it may be a much wider, opening. I'm talking about malls that don't have carpeting. Now, though, that's a different thing. But
and one thing to consider, too, is that no matter how much skill we have with echolocation, we will not use it in the wind. And snow, I'm in an area that has a pretty good bit of snow, and there's times when the echolocation, now it's a different kind of echolocation, because that snow is like a blanket of carpet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a whole different animal, environment. And I'm from Florida, so this is it's only been here 10 years, so it's a whole new environment for me, but it's different. It's a different kind of sound, and it really is not the kind of thing you get on the first or second try. It really is but all that echolocation in the wind is useless. So, I mean, it's very important that you understand that certainly the nature of the cane and what the cane is telling you, because there's so many different aspects of environment variables that sometimes you can't even control them. But it really is kind of, it's kind of a neat little thing to be walking down the sidewalk and try. I can feel a telephone pole as it's passing by. It's not necessarily an echo thing, but I can hear it. And so then I wonder, and I've heard people say, oh, I can tell a garbage can from a car. Now, I don't currently have that skill, and I'm not sure that they're just blowing. I mean, there's an object there, certainly, but I can tell, that was a truck versus a car. I was like, get out of here.
But
I can't tell that, but I can sense that object there. But I can't say, oh yeah, that was a pickup right there.
Yeah.
Versus an SUV or that
I felt the air in the back of the truck. Car. Yeah.
The other challenge. Where's the other challenge right now?
32.
Where's the other challenge?
As you travel, you certainly know when you hit a trash can, the sound of it.
Yes.
That old one versus rubber. A rubber can, or you certainly know tile when you hit it, or carpet, or the metal, even stripping between the tile and the carpet. I mean, there's and these things, believe it or not, whether you really pay attention to them or not, subconsciously you have that. You get that, and you have to pay attention to it to really recognize that that's what it is. And then the more you do that, It's second nature, that you are aware of those different surfaces. I'm here in my home, and I have three different surfaces right here, right now, and they're different. And I'm like, wow, yeah, that is, I don't pay any attention to it as I transition from one, but as we talking, I'm like, oh yeah, that's tile, that's stone, or that's wood, they're different. And here's carpet. The density, they're all different. I don't know if you can hear that, but.
Yes, I can hear
it. I have all these three different surfaces, and what's that? That's not,
I think Mike was trying to say something.
Yeah, I didn't realize the importance of echolocation until we start having to wear masks. And, it does deaden it a little bit in front of you. So normally not a big deal, but like if you go into a bank or something's carpeted, and it might have one of those big displays in front of you, you better make sure you got your cane skills down, because normally you might hear that. But when you got that mask on over your face, you might not. So,
and you know, I don't live in. Utah definitely has a snowy environment, but I cannot stand to wear anything on my head. And I don't know what I'd be like if I lived in Minnesota, where you practically got to walk around in an igloo, and then you got to figure out what you're hearing. Because I can't stand to put any. No, I don't like hats. I don't like earmuffs. It just. But my face and ears are so cold. That, yeah, you're sacrificing one for the other. And I despise. I've walked with an umbrella before in the rain. And that's just life. You know, you got to deal with that, because you're either going to get really wet, or you just learn to walk with an umbrella in one hand and, your cane in the other, and you work with it. So it takes a lot of practice and a lot of trial and error. And in the beginning, a lot more error than success, but that's exactly where you learn. And like Wayne said, it becomes second nature to you. You don't even realize, I'm touching an indoor-outdoor carpet in front of a front door. You hear the little sound, even a little sound with a cane tip in the middle of that surface. You just automatically register the high-pitched sound of that scraping. Oh, that's a doormat. And you just, it just becomes a second nature thing to you. You don't even think about it half the time. But it's called listening ahead. That's another part too. When you're walking, there's a curb in my neighborhood. And if I ain't paying attention, I mean, it doesn't take much, 1 inch of an unknown surface and you're on your face. So it really is so important to can't emphasize enough the utilization of the cane, using the cane itself. It just takes lots and lots of practice.
And the cane itself is what's listening ahead?
No, you are.
You're listening ahead.
The cane is telling you. I've heard a lot of people say that guide dogs, those are better travelers than people with canes, because that dog can see. But you're the brain. That's a dog still. Even though he can do a lot, you're still the brains of this package. Cane or dog, don't depend on a dog to, it might save your life occasionally, but you can have just as good a cane skills and be just as safe if guide dogs, it's just a matter of choice. Some people just have a different choice.
You have to trust the dog, but you have to trust your cane.
I'm such a detailed person. When I was doing my training back in 2010, we were in New Jersey and they did a little sample ride with a guide dog for an hour or so. And I wanted to know every fire hydrant. I wanted to know every crack. And that dog just scooted me along. I went a whole block without even realizing, but I'm a very detailed person. I want to know all the different landmarks around me. And you don't even touch them with a dog. So, it's just a personal preference.
I think maybe give some thought to, like, start in your familiar environment and just tap your cane on things like the kitchen floor or the sidewalk out in front of your house or the steps, and then learn the sounds that go with those items that you know because they're right in front of you. And then if you find that maybe you're not hearing that, then honestly, you might, if you haven't done so in a few years, you might think about a hearing test, because as all of us get older, we start to lose upper frequencies. And, there's always the possibility that, maybe the upper frequencies aren't as sharp as they used to be. Mine aren't. You still work around it, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm still hearing sounds. I just don't hear echoes.
Oh. So try facing a wall. Put your cane out to that wall and then walk to your cane, walk up to that wall, but just keep saying something like, hey, 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 hey. And tell me if you don't notice the difference of that wall in front of you, the difference in the sound as you get closer and closer to it.
Okay. I'll try that in a minute. And then
just try that.
Yeah. I have to go get my cane and stuff to do that. I'm nowhere near my cane. But can I ask one more quick question about the mall that somebody was mentioning? How realistic is it? Like I've been told by somebody that nobody actually goes into a mall by themselves when they're blind.
Phooey.
No,
a lot
of people do.
No way.
Yes, a lot of people do.
Yep.
That's a requirement for some people.
Even Costco and Sam's, navigating the parking lot and inside the store, it's really fun. And dragging your own cart around by yourself.
I gave some of my students that as an assignment.
Yeah, I used to work in a mall.
Clearly not the new students, but the more, as you get more experience, that's been an assignment.
So maybe walking around, but what about then, what would your advice be once you actually get into a store? I mean, you're going to need help to figure out where you're looking for things and what they are.
But you have to ask. You have to ask, you know, ask questions. You can listen. I always tell people, as soon as you walk into any new place, Walgreens is a great place to start with because it's relatively quiet, but you have to stand there and listen a minute and get your environment, figure out if where the cash registers are, where things are at. But I mean, there's nothing perfect. And Walmarts kind of are, many of them are the same. You can kind of know where the pharmacy is versus the main part of the store. But there again, that just takes practice. There are efficient. I mean, I myself am not this way, but there are a lot of blind people out there that they can get around a store. They have apps on their phones that can read things, and they want 100% of their independence, and they do not want to depend on anybody. But, you know, things happen. You want to be efficient with your time. You have to ask questions. And granted, I've found that with most sighted people, they can give you decent instructions on what they can see. But when they say, well, turn the corner and walk 20 feet and then do this, I'd get more instructions once you make the first turn because it gets a little sketchy after that. But you totally can, as a blind person. I love it when someone says, well, blind people just don't do that anymore. I said, yeah, I love, that's the best challenge in the world. It says, you want to bet? So besides driving a car, and although we've already proven in that a few years ago that we can do that too. So, there ain't a whole lot we can't do. I love the efficacy. That is the best principle I learned in school, was inside of yourself believing you can do it. And just about anything is possible after that.
And do you know what the apps are that can actually tell you where you're going inside of a store?
Well, I mean, Ira is a human being. You could use that. A lot of people use AIRA. That's a really good one because you have a live human being giving you some instructions. And I've used that in an airport. Right. But you could also use Seeing AI has a really good one that reads text. That's a free Microsoft app. TapTapSee is another one. Those are just a couple, right off the bat. Be My Eyes is another free. Now that's a free one. Ira does have a cost to it, if you want to use it extensively. And the NFB actually has a really good, if you tell Ira that you're an NFB member, then you can get it $20 a month for half an hour. I find that I don't even use the half hour, but that's a really good discount.
Okay. Thank you.
So when you're talking about when you go into a particular store, when you go into the mall itself?
Both of them. I mean, like, I've been told, well, it doesn't matter what I've also had a mobility teacher tell me that there is no way I should be walking in a parking lot on my own. and that I should always go sight a guide when I'm in a parking lot. I don't know. I mean, like,
Linda, was this teacher a blind teacher or a sighted teacher?
They were sighted.
Sometimes they're not sure how we live. You know, it's kind of like, yeah. I mean, there are some who are. I'm not saying that sighted instructors who teach cane travel don't always know, but many of them are trained differently than what we would train people. So, you know, they don't know. I mean, I was a mother with three kids, and if I needed shoes for the kids, how was I going to get it? I had to go to the store and take the kids into the store and try them on. You know, I think a lot of professionals think that we just have to have somebody there with us. And we don't have people there with us, you know. We have to do the same things other people do. We have to buy groceries. We have to buy clothes. We have to, you know, do the things that other people do. And unless you're extremely wealthy, you don't have a paid companion to help you do things. So you have to figure out, you know, how to do it. And if you need to, you do it. And that's where you, I think, find people in the Federation, because you learn so much from other people and how they're doing it. You know, like we're talking here today, there's no one way to do anything. There's several ways. But there's always somebody doing, and some people really love to shop. Now, I'm not a shopper particularly, but I know many people who love to do it, you know, just for fun. And so to them, it's entertainment and fun, and they love it.
Sharon, do you have a question?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was the challenge of you know, the freedom of being able to catch a bus, get off that bus, go through the parking lot. And granted, it took me a little trial error. I mean, you know, but I could hear the traffic behind me, and I could hear the store in front of me. I hear the carts, the buggies. I hear traffic, you know, and you can use all those things to get to that store.
I think we have a question.
It's just something we've done regularly at our NFB centers. I'm sure everyone I've spoken with, they've traveled independently to the stores.
Right. Couple other questions.
That's part of the training.
Couple other questions here. Sharon, go ahead, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say he took away part of my thunder, but 30 years ago, I lived in a place where I would go to a grocery store and the parking lot had a tilt that slanted downward that I followed that led me into the store and I could hear the carts. But I have trouble pushing a cart. I found that I can't turn it, and so I end up pulling it behind me. Does anybody else do that? Or
that's the way to do it.
What's common, that would make sense.
That's the way to do it. If you don't have a shopper assistant, you're doing it yourself. I pulled my cart and then led with my cane
behind.
Yeah, you have you're in front of the cart so that you can use your cane and navigate, and so you know where to turn. And I think that's very common.
That
actually
prevents you from running into things.
Yes, my
and other people
in the back.
And people.
This is Linda the other day that was asking about finding stairs, but I was wondering if she was wanting to know, if I don't know the building and it's unfamiliar to me, how do I find stairs? I was wondering if that's what she was wanting.
Well, I don't know. She's muted now, but I mean, you can address it if you want. If you have a stairs technique.
Well, I just use the seniors center. We're familiar with where the big stairways are, and I grew up in those big stone-like buildings where the stairways were in the middle of nowhere. Back when the days when you weren't given a cane until you were in eighth grade, believe it or not. And but usually I just sweep my cane till I locate the stairway and find the railing before I go anywhere on it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if she was trying to figure out how to find a stairway if I've never been in a building.
Well, carpet's another good sign too. It's not perfect, but there again, if you don't know a building, you physically just have to explore it. And as long as you're using your cane properly, you don't have anything to fear. And you will find, when there's a drop off, then obviously that's something to be concerned of. And that's why the long cane. And I emphasize again, the long cane is so vital, because it gives you so much information beforehand.
And if you're outside the building, and some buildings, I know there was a bank that I went to and they had stairs going up. And if you're just shorelining alongside the building, you would never know. But if it has stairs going up and you can't find an entrance, you should turn around and then maybe find that curve, find the building, and then raise your cane up. Find the building, raise your cane up to feel each time as you're walking, raise it up to feel it and see if there's a step.
Okay, 816, your question.
I spoke with Hadley School for Blind, and one of the ladies there was telling me about using air pressure as a method of determining where objects are. Could you discuss that, please? Thank you.
That's a technique that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, I think
with.
Jerry mentioned that.
I don't use air pressure. I don't know what do you mean by air pressure. Jerry, you know?
I'm not sure exactly what that is about. I was trying to think of a method where you would do that.
For sure.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, if you're in an open area that has, you know, wind or air conditioning and things blowing through things, I've never really heard it called that in that method. But
no, yeah, I mean, I've used it as a cue, like a vent, you know, or something like that. Some buildings have air vents outside of them, or you can hear an air conditioning unit or something like that. But that's just as a cue. I don't understand air pressure in itself.
Yeah.
The sound of it.
I'm not familiar with that. But there's so many methods. I mean, there's so many different. There again, we're back to, there's not one technique that works best for all. Like, I'm not a sighted guide person, almost never. I went to a Paul McCartney concert about 8 years ago, and it was loud as you could be. That was the one time that I decided, you know, I got to get out of here. So I needed an arm. And so I very rarely do I take an arm. People ask me, do you want an arm? I said, no, I have two of my own. Thanks. I don't necessarily mean to be belligerent about it. It's just me. It's just as a mobility instructor, it's really hard for me to relinquish my control. It's very important for me to know how to get where I'm going. And it's unfortunate that when the sighted world sees you in movement, in motion, they think that it's their responsibility to take care of you because they now saw you. But I got out here by myself, and I certainly will figure it out. And you cannot... I love when I teach students and they say, I did it perfectly. I walked down the center of the sidewalk and I didn't miss a beat. Well, I don't care how good of an instructor or good of a traveler you are. You have to know your edges. You have to know where things are and you're going to hit things. And it is a totally natural thing to hit, find that, hear that metal sound just before you hit an escalator. So you know that's where you are. So I mean, totally is a, I love the problem solving aspect of it, but the whole world thinks that you need help because you're not perfect.
Hey, Jerry, that reminds me of the infamous question. Excuse me, where are you trying to go?
I love
you know? Where are you trying to go? Like, I know where I'm going. Where are you going?
It's hard too, because as an instructor, I'm a pretty sarcastic, belligerent, cynical person, and so usually I don't give them a straight answer. It's like, do you know where you're going? He said, do you know where you're going? I said, do you drive? He says, yeah. I said, well, you take care of what you know, and I'll take care of what I know. It's hard not to want to be, and I know that they mean well. They really do mean well.
They do. I guess I'd say thanks. I got it. I'm good. Thank you. Yeah, keep it moving.
Okay, it's 2:57 in this discussion and prepare for the next event.